More of The Truth with Sherwin Hughes is next on 1017 The Truth, The Truth app, and 1017thetruth.com.
Welcome to Hour 2 of The Truth with Sherwin Hughes. Grant says, Professor Hughes, you have a radio talk show. Mandela Barnes is a politician running for the U.S. Senate. He's had a year to make this interview happen. Now he makes a half-hearted attempt at an interview, limiting you to 15 minutes and dictating what you're going to ask him. Man, please, dog, Grant says. Let him reschedule when he can to give you a half hour of his time and when you both agree to each other's terms. And then Grant says, hello to you, Caribou. Well, Grant, thank you for chiming in. If you want to chime in as well, 833-212-1017, 833-212-1017. You can call or you can text. Yeah, I'm not sure the interview would happen. So they're making it seem like it's a favor to me. And the other thing is, typically when you set up a political interview, and I'm not kidding, y'all, I've done hundreds of them over the last decade. It's usually an email of schedules. Hey, Sherwin, want to get on the show? Here's when we're available. Let me know if these times work. And I'll respond in kind and say, yeah, let's do it this time. That's it. 9 times out of 10, that is how we do it. How we schedule and how we do things on Black Talk Radio, we keep it very easy. We keep it very simple. It's usually very laid back and nonchalant when it comes to scheduling. There's not like a person that's got to call the person and you got to check the schedule and you got to get back to this person. No, no. It's just like, hey, here's when we're available. We want to come on. When can you get us on? Or they'll just leave it up to me. Hey, Sherwin, we want to get on with you. When can we come? I actually had to have this woman, his communications person. Her name is Lauren. She's like, yeah, we need to talk, like on the phone. And I was like, cool, whatever. Here's my number. And then she was supposed to call me on a particular day. She didn't. I let a week pass. She's like, oh, sorry, I've been real busy. I'll call you on Sunday at 4 o'clock. Sunday came and went. No call from her. And so I believe it was the third attempt, and it was me reaching out to her. I was like, yo, like seriously, because all we're doing is delaying. And then she apologized, of course, for being busy, because that shows that African-American talk radio is not a priority, at least to not his. It's not a priority to his campaign. I can't speak on behalf of the candidate, but I also know that Mandela's a bit gun shy when it comes to doing Black talk radio, because there's been, I suppose, some animosity that goes back to his early days of getting elected to the state assembly, because the kind of Black that he represents does not represent enough of the spirit of the Black community in Milwaukee, which is tired, which is angry, which is disrespected. He doesn't really exhibit that disrespect in his politics. He just kind of goes along and gets along with the progressives. But there's something to be said about the nuance of being an African-American progressive. And this is why I vehemently disagree with him, because it gives a perception that Black people are overwhelmingly liberal. Let me get it out. I can't even damn say the word. I hate it so much. We're not liberal. We're capitalists. We're also very much pro-democracy. We are entrepreneurs. We are extremely moderate in our politics. There's even an evangelical Christian thread in African-American politics. We are not liberal. We are not progressive. We're not. And maybe that is an extension or an outgrowth or an unintended consequence of the world just coming together to where white folks can be really liberal and really, really progressive. Black people still have to fight for stuff. We still have to fight for basic civil rights and fair treatment all too often. Now, it's not a woe is me situation if you're Black, but we have to keep our finger on the pulse of what America is doing, because if we don't keep our finger on the pulse, we're going to get repressed all over again. To be a Black progressive means you are looking at the big picture of Democratic Party values. And there's nothing wrong with that. But if you are Black, you've got to represent the interests, the varied and diverse interests of the Black community first. We need you to be a black person in the room with these white folks, not be a black person in the room with the white folks because you don't make them feel guilty about being white. And they need to respect that. And if they don't respect that you represent the heavy interest and the history of black people, then you shouldn't be in those rooms at all, because you're not going to get anywhere. Because what they need is they need more of us for their agenda. They can say defund the police because they want to run around with dope and not go to jail. We can't say defund the police because we still have crime and violence we got to deal with. They can say we need our student loans forgiven. You know, the progressives, a lot of black folks didn't go to college because they couldn't get in because the public schools were so underfunded. They didn't even have enough basic, you know, academic studies to get them into college. They can talk about LGBTQ+IA rights all day long. And I'm not going to have that discussion with black folks today. You know how we feel about that collectively. Because they can prioritize those minorities and those protected classes over black people. The progressive wants to skirt our issues, or they'll do something like, well, sure, when I believe in African-American issues, and I'm like, oh, how so? I want to decriminalize marijuana. And that's when they tell you, because they read something on Google. Sherwin, did you know that a lot of African-Americans are in prison, have gone to prison because of marijuana? I'll bet you didn't know that. Sherwin, did you know that the black community is overcriminalized when it comes to drug use? And I'll say, you don't say. And they think because they want to not just smoke weed, but get the entrepreneurial benefits from it when it's legal, that they think that's a black issue. Say that they look at marijuana as something that they want to do to make money and use recreationally. And when they have the conversation with us about legal marijuana, it's because we get criminalized because of it. No, we're entrepreneurs too. And you can even see the racial stratification of legal marijuana shops all over this country. They are still white. Not to mention, do you guys know the exorbitant cost to get a dispensary up and running in legal states? It costs millions. Now, you can't say in modern day America, no blacks allowed. You can't say that. We get very mad. We'll protest. We'll probably sue you if you say that. So what you do is you raise the price of entry so we cannot participate. That's what they do. Can't say no blacks allowed. Just charge more for the ticket. Charge more for the cover charge. That's what they do to us. And so it's very difficult to reconcile the African-American progressive that is in that room because they make left-leaning white folks feel very comfortable about being white. It's not that I seek to make white people feel uncomfortable, but I just want to hold them to a level of responsibility and accountability like they hold us. As a black man, as black men, women, and children, we are responsible for everything we do all of the time. We get no days off and can't make a single mistake because this beautiful melanin, this skin color, takes no days off. In fact, melanin works overtime. See what we got here. What'd you say, Craig? Craig says, good morning. We say good morning back. And Craig is referring to Kerry as a mayoral candidate. Go ahead, Kerry. Run for. You want to say hi to the people? Test your volume today with the people.
Yeah. Can you guys hear me better today?
Quiet.
Still quiet?
You know what else is crazy? Because you know how Benjamin gets. I listened to Tory Lowe's show yesterday on my way home. You know, Benjamin like shakes the whole studio with his booming voice. Even Benjamin was subdued a little bit. But I think the issue, Carrie, is if you just get into the mic, you just got to get in it, which.
Yeah, I got to get in it like this.
Oh, that's perfect. Talk like that all the time.
I don't. It's way too close.
You told me how you feel about being that close to the mic now.
Yeah.
But for the perfection of our quality and our sound, if you just get in it. Because I heard Zach this morning. Zach sounded good.
He was probably in it like this.
Ain't nothing wrong with being in it. I love being in it. In fact, it's the weekend. I plan to be in it in plenty of it. I mean, microphones. 262. Oh, there we go. Thank you, Zach. I only get dings when Zach is in the producer studio. Yeah, that's right. Tell her, Zach. 414-269 says, Cavalier Johnson and Obama are not the same kind of racist, just saying, oh, referring to what our previous caller, Donald, said. So what I think Donald was getting at when he was making those comparisons between Barack Obama and Cavalier Johnson, both of them have reached out olive branches to Republicans. And we held it against Obama because when Obama got first elected president, We were watching every single thing he did, didn't we? Every word he said. Remember when he wore that tan suit? They still talk about that tan suit because we watched everything he did because he was the representation of black men in America, black husbands in America, black fathers in America, black politicians, executives. He was all of that. So we watched every single word. And Barack Obama bent over backwards to try and get Republicans to join in the conversation. In fact, he went so far that he would stall his own agenda and essentially wait for the Republicans to come around. Now that he's out of office, I understand why he did that. That we, as black people who have been demeaned and demoted and disrespected more than anybody else, we'll still work with you. We can put our differences aside for the betterment of this nation. And so we thought Obama went too far in trying to work with the Republicans. Cavalier Johnson is doing the exact same thing. And what I think they're going to find out if we're students of history, that Barack Obama just started to go his own way. But he established in the early days of his presidency, he's like, I want everybody to be participating in these policy discussions. Even though the Republicans are from a different party, we all have a job to do to lift all boats and help move this country forward. It's a very good way to start your executive tenure. Reaching an olive branch to your political foes. Because here's the thing. Just like Obama, Chevy won. He's the mayor, come hell or high water. He's the mayor. So it makes sense for him to say, you know what? I won. I don't have to be insecure about winning the mayor's race. Chevy didn't have to call Georgia for 11,000 votes, but apparently Trump did. Oh, Trump is still on hold, by the way, with Georgia trying to get his 11,000 votes. He'll let you know what happens in a couple of years. So because you won and you have the confidence of winning, because the conservatives did try and run a candidate here in the city of Milwaukee, and I would argue that was the best they could do. What did Bob Donovan get? 28% of the vote. That is probably the max votes that a Republican can get. And I need conservatives who are still left in the city of Milwaukee to stop saying, well, your problem is Democratic leadership. If you get a conservative in there, they're going to get tough on crime. No. The reason why we are in this position that we are in, especially our financial predicament, is because of Republicans. So we're not going to elect another one. It's just not going to happen here. If you're a Republican and you want to run for office, go somewhere else. There's so much geography in this state that will elect you. Just not here. It's a conscious decision done by the voters in this city and this county. However, I digress. But it makes sense for Chevy to want to work with the legislature. And he promoted that very heavily on the campaign trail. In fact, I think it not only got him more credibility, it also probably helped bring the RNC to this city. Now, I'm not celebrating the Republican National Convention coming to Milwaukee because it's, you know, overall good for, you know, politics in America. The Republicans are not going to change their stripes at all. But the revenue, we hope, will allow Milwaukee to have more resources to spend on the things that we are not getting from our lack of shared revenue. 808s and Heartbreak says, Sherwin, it's very dangerous for Miss James. I'd imagine you're talking about Letitia James, the Attorney General of the state of New York, to go down the slippery slope of what real estate is worth in New York. Everything in New York is overpriced. So I got to get into more details of that. And thank you for chiming in, 808. So you did your research on that. So what Donald Trump was doing is he was intentionally overinflating the value of his real estate so he could use that overinflated real estate value to borrow more money. So one of his apartments, and this is, I don't understand this. In New York, do they call apartments condos or apartments? But they made this reference to one apartment that Donald Trump owns in New York that he says, like he even lied about the square footage of it. Let's say it was 10,000 square feet. It was way bigger than that. But let's say his apartment in New York was 10,000 square feet. He said it was 33,000 square feet. And then he said this apartment, just as one example, was worth $300 million, which, of course, that's an insane amount of money. But again, real estate in New York is heavily inflated, mostly because they don't have any more space in New York. If you're going to build in New York, you got to build up. You can't build out because all the space is filled. So he lied about the square footage of the property. Then he lied about the value of the property and then used that to borrow and to leverage more money. Letitia James said, in the history of New York, no apartment of any size has ever been valued at, let alone been sold at, $300 million. So I believe that she knows what she's doing and she knows what she's talking about. Because you got to keep in mind, Letitia James has been on Donald Trump since the very beginning, and she knows better. I would never profess to push back or to argue the point with an attorney general of a state like New York. When she put those dollar amounts out, she was completely correct. And if she says in the history of New York, and New York has been around since, like, it's been a territory since the 1600s. And she said in the history of this state, there has never been any real estate valued or a New York City apartment valued at that. But it just happens to be Donald Trump. And he used that inflated value to get more money, money that he thought that he was going to be able to pay back, and loans he thought he was going to be able to pay back with the U.S. Treasury. That was his number one motivation for running for president, so he could have access to all of our tax money. Let me take a break, come back. I do want to have a little conversation about shared revenue. I did pull up some data. I even heard a little bit of a conversation about, well, maybe we shouldn't be giving any of our money, any of our revenue to Madison, because it's not fair how they only return something like 10% of that revenue back to us. It is not quite that easy. So we'll talk about that. And should I do the Mandela Barnes interview? Y'all got me rethinking my decision. Should I wait until he's available to come into the studio? But let me be clear. I have not yet decided who my first guest is going to be here at these beautiful studios at the Avenue in downtown Milwaukee. Because whoever my first in-studio guest is, like, that's going to live on forever. So I got to be very, very careful about who my guest is. And I just don't know if I want it to be him. That's like a personal thing for me, because I want to be able to look back on who my first interview was at these brand new 25,000 square foot studios. Like, who that first guest is that comes here. Like, this is an incredible space. Woo, wait till y'all see it. Ooh, you're going to love it. This is monumental for Black radio, and I'm so, so glad to be a part of it. You're listening to The Truth with Sherwin Hughes on the new 101.7 FM. If you want to call or text, whatever it is, 833-212-1017, 833-212-1017. Don't go anywhere. I'll be right back with Al.
It's The Truth with Sherwin Hughes on 101.7 The Truth, The Truth app, and 1017thetruth.com.
Welcome back. 414-524 says, I know you love it when I preface my comments with, quote, I'm a white guy. But I'm a white guy, and I have to say being white sucks. Ugly and hairy, can't dance, and if I eat spicy food, my insides will literally explode. Would not recommend. Well, look on the bright side of being white. Think of your wonderful history of stealing and conquering a nation and creating a system of government, which still, to some extent, does benefit ugly, hairy, can't dance people that if they eat spicy food, their insides explode. And I'm not white, contrary to popular belief. But on the outside looking in and knowing a lot more about white culture and whiteness, even different white ethnicities, say a Jewish ethnicity or nationalities, you know, there's German, there's Norwegian, Southern European, and Italian. Knowing what I know about them and how they have these triumphant stories of coming to this new land, coming to America, the land of opportunity, coming here with nothing, didn't know the language, had no money, came over on boats, but certainly a different type of boat crews that brought us, and how they worked really hard, did everything they had to do to make money and to start businesses and provide for their families. And then the next generation did successively better. I'm very familiar with those stories and how those stories are the watercolors that make up the kaleidoscope of the American dream on canvas. It seems now that the best thing about being white and having that whiteness is what you can do for other people and how you can help other people who may have similar immigrant stories than you, and how you know what that's like, the struggles that they may endure, because it's a part of who you are and how you became to be. And because you know that immigrants come into a country from anywhere, from any border, whether it be Ellis Island or the southern border, are going to face certain things. They're going to face scrutiny and prejudice, bigotry. The Irish are still mad that they got discriminated against. The Southern Europeans, the Greeks and the Italians, they were looked at as the lowest of the low. Now, granted, the lowest of the low amongst the whites. Anti-Semitism still exists and it's very, very real. So they can tell you what that is like. And because they have that experience of what oppression looks like, shouldn't they be able to help or provide guidance to those who are dealing with it right now? But an unusual thing about America is that we become very closed off and protectionist over anything that we have acquired. If we get an opportunity, we got to keep it. We got to guard it. We don't share it. We don't have very much of a communal attitude. But again, capitalism doesn't really allow that. There are flaws in capitalism. I would prefer it to any other system because the market has a way of being colorblind. If I come up with a better idea or a better product, or I'm talking on a microphone right now, if I come up with a better idea for a microphone and it's better than anything else that's on the market, people are going to buy my microphone. Very few people will say, I'm not buying that microphone, even though it's better and it's superior in every single way. I'm not going to buy it because it was created by a black man. Very few people would say that. So if we can take some of our creativity and use the market to our advantage, I prefer that system. We can't have European socialism here. That's why Bernie Sanders kept fizzling out with his campaigns. First of all, I don't want anything that is classically or originally European impacting American policy, politics, or the economic system. I'm just not with that because we are not them. But the reason why you can have these socialist programs in countries like Norway or Finland or Sweden or Switzerland, where everybody's college is free, everybody's health care is free, all the infrastructure is all neat and tidy, and the roads are paved, and the buildings are beautiful, and everything is maintained. There are no bad neighborhoods. Everything is just nice. The reason why they do that in those countries is because of their racial homogeneity. They're all the same, because when they do something for people in Norway or Finland or Sweden, they're helping only white people. If you have programs like this in this country, you would be helping Mexicans. You'd be helping people from Colombia. You'd be helping people from the Caribbean. You'd be helping African-Americans. You'd be helping African immigrants. And so we won't have those kinds of programs here because there are people that would rather have nothing than to see everybody get something. That is the God's honest truth. And if you are white, you are totally understanding of that concept. You don't want the blacks to get anything, even though it may help you more, because you can rely on being white and we can't. Very simple concept. I play this audio clip. Oh, I probably should ask, Carrie, has my like our audio clips and our sound clips from the previous studio, has that all migrated over here? It has not? Oh, dag
nabbit. I'm not sure if it will.
Oh, we gonna make it. Because I have all the audio. I just got to give it to you. We'll worry about that later. Today feels a lot like the second day of school. Like yesterday was the first day. I didn't know what a bathroom was. I still know what a bathroom is. But now I'm a little bit more used to it. Carrie, have you found that this layout that we have is like a maze? You take the wrong turn. You know we lost Zach yesterday for like 7 hours because Zach just didn't know where he was at. We just lost him. Do you know your way around pretty good, Carrie?
Down here?
Yeah.
On our floor?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. What about upstairs?
Upstairs, no, still confusing, but I don't really see myself going up there unless I'm going to say hi to Maya or something.
I don't even know where Maya, Verche, and Danielle even sit. Do they have offices or they have like an area? I don't even know where it is.
Yeah, they have like desks that they sit at.
Okay. Maybe I'll go up there and explore.
Yeah. Have you seen Kyle and Cherie's office?
I think on the original tour, but that was such a long time ago that I could not tell you. Like, if I needed to go up to Kyle's office right now, I'd have to ask somebody. I know where Wex's office is because you look up and you see his office no matter where you at. You see Wex in there.
Maya's right in front of Wex's office.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
Huh. Well, maybe she's moving up in the world or they're keeping an eye on her, one or the other. All right, let's read some text messages here. 414-238 says, Brother Hughes, please don't contort yourself in order to give a candidate that's running for political office a platform to the people. That can place said candidate in office, but the candidate himself doesn't give effort nor acknowledge the very people that he's hoping to represent. It's equivalent to rewarding negative behavior. Now, y'all starting to get in my head again now, because I do owe y'all the opportunity to at least hear from him, don't I? Maybe. There might be some people out there that want to hear from him. The other thing is, you're not going to like the interview. You're not, because it's going to be edited. It's going to be damn near scripted, because it's got to be in 15 minutes. And I got to get a number of different topics and issues out, and he has to have time to respond. It's basically like things that he has rehearsed saying over and over and over again as he travels throughout the state and tries to collect votes from places that aren't Milwaukee. It seems like the content of my dialogue with him, because they did give me some bullet points of things they want to talk about. It's like Social Security and Medicare and, you know, pushing back on Ron Johnson, because Ron Johnson said, oh, there's already enough jobs in Wisconsin. We don't need to create more. Not Ron Johnson being a fascist, not Ron Johnson. I think there might be something in there about Ron Johnson being an election denier. But Ron Johnson offers so much more, like him spending the 4th of July in Russia and how cozy he was to Donald Trump. The ways in which Mandela Barnes's campaign can hit Ron Johnson the way black people want to see is just not happening. And so if I interview him, it will sound very drab. I won't be fully myself. I'm not myself until I interview somebody in person. Just like a phone conversation is good, it will suffice, but it's not the same as talking to somebody in person. So I'm not sure. I mean, I have until the 29th to decide. It's almost like, because of the hoops I had to jump through, because whoever his person is who handles his communications and press releases and interactions with the media, they weren't going to schedule the interview until she actually had a phone conversation with me. And I feel a little bit disrespected, because I don't need to talk on the phone to anybody. Either you come in here and talking to the people or you're not. So I don't know. Let me sleep on. I got until the 29th and I reserve the right to cancel. Make no mistake about it. So if I decide that I don't want to do the interview, or if I give them, I'm not going to say my terms, our terms here at 1017 The Truth. Well, I'm going to say the people that listen to 1017 The Truth, who are overwhelmingly voters, except for Dion, they want this. They want him to be in studio. Have you guys noticed that a lot of the African-American leadership that endorsed Alex Lazary when he was running for Senate have not been as vocal in their endorsement for Mandela Barnes? I love our county executive, David Crowley, because he seems to be above the politics of the day. And he just does county executive things. He's cutting ribbons. He's going to parks. He's posing with people in Fox Point and Bayside and Cudahy. He's just doing his thing. We love you, David. David is different. I could text David Crowley right now. He's county executive. Hey, man, I can be there in 15 minutes. I don't have to like talk to his people, and they don't have to give bullet points of what the interview is going to consist of. David Crowley loves talking to the community. He's one of my favorite people, one of the easiest people to talk to on air, because he does not hide from his blackness. Hell, he can't, nor should he. I don't know, guys. It's a lot. Think about. Oh, speaking of Dion, Sherwin, it's a good documentary on Tubi called Rigged, Voter Suppression Playbook. It's real good. Those Republicans are some tricky racist people. Then Dion says the election of Obama started the red wave in 2010 and it turned everything red. Dion, did you vote for the black president? I'm wondering if you even voted for him, because Dion is a proud non-voter. And I got mad one day because I take it real personal, because I know what we had to endure to keep and maintain our right to vote. And I know that the KKK, who we always reference as being, you know, the racist group that's always killing us whenever a white person or a white cop does something, we always relegate them to the KKK. Do you know that the KKK started as a terrorist organization to stop and prevent us and to scare us from voting? So when we don't vote now, the KKK's original mission still lives. And so I tell folks, look, I want you to vote. I want you to be knowledgeable. I want you to have a voice in picking the people that are going to spend your money and your resources, Because if we don't vote, they know that. If certain zip codes and certain census tracts have low voter turnout, they're not going to invest money in communities where people don't care. They're not going to. And here's the thing. I'm going to tell y'all something, even though I shouldn't. You can go vote without selecting a single candidate. Yeah, you can write candidates in, but you also can go to the polls on election day, give them your ID, sign the poll book, get your ballot, don't fill it out, and just go put it in the ballot machine blank. It counts as a human being in that area, in that ward that voted. And if that ward is 95% black, then that adds to the number of overall African-Americans who voted. Now, you didn't select a candidate, but you were still counted as a voter. And the more of us that are counted as voters, the more attention, the more resources we are going to get. Now, I shouldn't have told y'all that because a bunch of y'all going to turn in blank ballots because we do have some candidates that you need to actually vote for. But if you're a black person and you don't vote, okay, fair enough. I ain't going to change your mind. But I hope you see a noose when you don't vote. And I hope you picture a neck in that noose. You're listening to The Truth with Sherwin Hughes on the new 101.7 FM. Don't go anywhere. I'll be right back.
This is The Truth with Sherwin Hughes on 101.7 The Truth, The Truth app, and 1017thetruth.com.
Got a couple of things I need to talk about. I got a bunch of text messages I want to read as well. Shared revenue. And why should the city of Milwaukee give the state of Wisconsin anything? It's not like we're giving the money to just the city of Madison or Dane County. The Wisconsin state legislature takes all of the collected and combined revenue from state sanctioned sources. So sales taxes is one. The state doesn't tax property. Do they get some of it? Maybe in a roundabout sort of way. But the state does collect, because when you pay state sales taxes, so when you buy a car, even if you buy a used car, the cost to register and title your car is the 5.5% sales tax in southeastern Wisconsin. I think it's 5.0 everywhere else in the rest of the state. So if you buy a $10,000 car, you're paying $500 in sales tax, and that's your registration fee. That money goes to the State Department of Revenue. It's like the state's IRS. The IRS is the federal tax collection agency. The DOR, the Department of Revenue, is the state collection agency. And that is how we put together the entire state budget with all of the different sources of tax revenue collected in all 1,851 municipalities and 72 counties in the state. Because there are more people in Milwaukee, there's more income in Milwaukee, more income taxes, more people buy things in Milwaukee, simply because we offer more and we just have a larger population. The amount of money that we revenue that we collect that gets sent to Madison is more than any other state, sheerly because of our population. And so we only get, it's like 9.7% or something like that back. And so we can't say, well, no, we're not going to give any of our money, any of our revenue to Madison. That would mean that we have zero state sales tax in Milwaukee. And we're not able to do that. We are a city. We are a county in an entire state. Think of the state of Wisconsin as a commonwealth made up of little smaller fiefdoms. The other thing is, so we have county government. County government is a very big unit of government. They control everything from the airport to the zoo to the sheriff's department, the district attorney, the courts. All of that is state funded. So if we don't want to give the state of Wisconsin any shared revenue, we would not have DAs anymore. We would not have judges anymore. We would not have courts anymore because all of that stuff is funded by the state. Because we have state agencies and state institutions in Milwaukee, the state gives us some of our money back so we can fund and pay for those state institutions. Because what you're going to hear is the city of Milwaukee may have to reduce our police force, but we ain't laying off judges. Have you noticed that? We're not closing branches of the court. We don't need, in my opinion, 40. How many branches of the circuit court do we have? 46? 48? I bet if we close 10 branches of Milwaukee County Circuit Court, we could save millions of dollars. Now, it will increase the caseload in some of those other court jurisdictions. But when it comes to things that are state mandated, those never get cut because part of our shared revenue has to fund the things that the state of Wisconsin provides to the city of Milwaukee. And a lot of our functions are state functions. So we don't have the ability to say, no, we're going to cut off all of our revenue sharing with the state of Wisconsin. Now, sometimes it works out where our shared revenue, while it's small, we definitely need more. We got to make budget cuts in the city of Milwaukee to accommodate for our small share of that revenue. We have a state budget surplus of $5 billion. And I've gotten to know Tony Evers quite well. Quite well over the years he's been in office. He is in Milwaukee a lot. He has given so much time, attention, and just pure money like checks, resources, grants to Black-owned businesses. We got more pandemic relief than y'all would believe. Believe the relief. Tony Evers is in Milwaukee like twice a month. It doesn't always make the news. It's not always big fanfare, but he's walking around neighborhoods. He's walking around with Black legislators, asking them what they need, meeting constituents. He is here quite often, way more than Scott Walker was ever here. We haven't gotten that kind of attention from a governor since, I don't even know if Jim Doyle was here that much. And if Jim Doyle was here, it's because he was trying to spite Tom Barrett when Tom Barrett was mayor. Some of y'all may not know this, but Jim Doyle and Tom Barrett weren't even on speaking terms. They didn't get along at all. So as far as those that say it isn't fair that we're giving any money, any of our revenue to Madison, we should just keep all of our shared revenue. Well, that means that Milwaukee would no longer have a state sales tax and we don't have the ability to get rid of that. Now, there's been a referendum where the voters were asked in Milwaukee if you were OK with raising our sales tax. Voters in that referendum voted yes, but the Wisconsin legislature still didn't approve it. 414712 says, because of the Republicans' necessity to overtly and politically use policies that put Milwaukee in a continuous strangulation, more shared revenue is out of the question for them. You are correct. Then they go on to say, what will they tell their constituents that depend on the continuous strangulation of Milwaukee for their pure pleasure? It's going to take a Republican being angry and being offended by Milwaukee's lack of resources to take care of itself that will change that paradigm. But because we are in such tumultuous political times, Republicans, for their benefit, you got to listen to me good now. I got to try and articulate this to y'all the way I understand it in my head. If Milwaukee does well with political cooperation from the other party, then that's a feather in the cap to Democratic leadership because the Republicans don't have a plan for anything. Do you know that Barack Obama has been out of office for 6 years now and they still haven't come up with an answer to the Affordable Care Act? The Republicans have no policy plan. Their entire political party is just set up against hating the Democrats. That's it. They have no ideas. They have no plans. I mean, they want to cut taxes for rich people, but other than that, they have nothing for the middle class. They have nothing for poor people. They have no conversations about investing in education. None of that, unless it's school choice. They don't have any concrete policy ideas because I've been asking y'all for a week or more. Hell, I've been asking y'all since we've been at Radio City. We've been done, moved out of there. What is a Republican plan or policy that actually helps people? There are none. Their only plan is to hurt Democrats. So at the end of the day, they can't go against themselves and work with Democratic leadership. They can't do it. Because they have no policies to stand on. Do you notice that Republicans never have to work with Democrats? That's because Republicans don't produce any legislation. They don't produce any policies. If they did, then they would have to get compromise from the Democrats. But because they don't produce anything, they're like Foxconn. It's a perfect example. All these grandiose promises and ain't delivered so much as a damn 10-inch flat screen. Take a little pause for the cause. Should we dig into this whole Trump lawsuit thing in New York? I know it sounds sexy. It sounds like they might have Trump on the ropes. But I seriously think dude is above the law. I really do. And I don't want to disappoint people by setting up our hopes that he gets in trouble. I don't know if he will. Everything gets settled out of court. The Truth with Sherwin Hughes. We'll be right back.
You are listening to The Truth with Sherwin Hughes on 1017 The Truth, The Truth app, and 1017thetruth.com.
Oh, welcome back to the program. I didn't cuss, did I? It's gonna happen. We have a button Well, not we. You, Carrie, have a button you can push in case I say a word that's not appropriate. Does it work? Should we test it? Should we? On the count of three.
No, stop it.
Zach will do it. Zach, should we test the dump button? Because we got to see. Okay, now. We got to make sure everything works. Because remember, we're in our testing phase. So if it doesn't work, we wouldn't get in trouble, Carrie. Because we're like, oh, we need to test. Make sure everything is working. We got to test the levels and the meters and all of the things. Well, here's one way in which we can test it. We might be able to test it with Al. You're on the new 101.7 The Truth. Now, Al, hold on now. Don't cuss, please. Because we don't know if our anti-cussing software has been downloaded. So, all right, we're going to keep it civil. Okay, Al, go ahead.
Okay, well, good morning. First thing I'll say, I hear a lot of people talk about the Republican Party and, you know, people playing the olive branch. When it comes to the laws and lessons of life, I never feel like a person should do an olive branch, because basically you are asking a person to like you, or you're asking a person to communicate with you for something you didn't do. See, I always said if I have to do an olive branch, I'd rather cut the whole tree up and pull up the root.
But Al, isn't compromise a good rule of thumb? Because you have to look at it almost like a marriage. The wife can say, I'm not doing that. I'm not listening to you. I'm not going to work with you or compromise with my husband. She could very well say that and just have her way. Shouldn't politics the marriage have some kind of compromise, because you're doing it for the children, for the voters and constituents?
Well, yes and no, because when you look at a lot of countries that's in power, the reason why they're in power and the reason why they don't compromise is because if they compromise, everybody will die. And when you look at Republicans, they say what they want and they do what they want because they don't compromise. And I do know for black people, they feel compromising and doing an olive branch is showing they're going to be the bigger person. And you still get nothing but sugar, honey, iced tea in the end. It's like a old, dried up sugar, honey, iced tea that's been left in the sun too long. At the end of the day, it's still sugar, honey, iced tea. But when you have people so built on trying to play a bigger person with somebody who's not going to be the bigger person, you're still going to get sugar, honey, iced tea. But when you have people who say, well, I'd rather walk away, and I walk away and I build strength with the voters, that's how you can overcome it. But if you're trying to play civil with a person who has no desire to be civil, because you then basically put the fire in their hands, it's not going to work because you gave them all the leverage. So that's why I don't believe in that. Before I go out my way to, do an olive branch, I'd rather just cut the whole tree down and dig up the root. Because when you dig up the root of the tree, everything flourish, everything prosper, everything's beautified.
So what do you think, a minority political party or a minority people should do if we're not compromising? We should burn it all down and then hopefully we start anew?
No, what minorities should do is vote. Versus sitting on their ashy behind and sitting there saying they're not going to get involved, or versus sitting there saying, I need whiteness to be greatness. You can't vote away their wealth, but you can vote away their power. And we do know for black people who are looking for approval and who want to be accepted, they will do it, but they will do anything to get whiteness to accept them. But when you don't need no approval and you don't need to be accepted by them, and everybody come together and vote, then you vote away their power. But as long as you want to get that pat on your head to be good Negro, or to say you're one of us, then you're going to compromise and you're still not going to get nothing in the end. That's why we as minorities, we as black people are still in the position, because we know that we do not stand 10 toes down. You have some black people who don't vote. You got some black people that we got to stand behind the Republicans because you need that whiteness to get it. That's not helping us. That's why we're in a position. When you go back to them 250 slave rebellions, they didn't say that. They all fought together. That's why they don't want to put it on government. That's why they don't want to put it in history books. Because when you have black people who stand 10 toes down and they don't care about no religion, they don't care about no Bible, they don't care about none of that. That's what you call black power. Because when you have black people who stand together and they all vote, that's black power that leads to black excellence, that leads to black structure. And then, because we all want to have that approval. We want to have that likeness. We want to sit there and say, we're going to do an olive branch, and they still going to sit there and say, I don't care if you do olive branch or not, I'm not doing it. So you're putting the power in their hand. History has proved that, and when you look at our voting block, it's still showing it. That's why I never agree with compromise. Even in a marriage, don't compromise. Because even that wife who says she ain't going to do it, what is that husband going to do? He's going to go out his way to do everything he can. That's why that old wise saying, treat a man or a woman like sugar, honey, like tea, and they will love no funky draws, because all they want is that hopeless and that little percentage that you are going to love them and you're going to bend over. That's why a lot of them stay in them abusive relationships, because that person who don't compromise has the power. And once they give you that 1% they're going to do right, they're going to sit there, stab you in your back, go between your legs, take that knife across your face, play tic-tac-toe, cut your throat, and stab you in your temple. That is the problem why we're in the same predicament that we're in, because we want to compromise. And even when the RNC come here, if they tear up the city, we still ain't going to get none of this stuff, a bunch of debt and money that's not going to hit our black communities. I said what I said, and that's what I stand on. But for those who believe something different, continue to keep hope alive like Jesse Jackson and see where it gets you. Thank you.
Thanks, Al. That was an interesting and enlightening, I reckon. No, I'm still a fan of compromise. I am. I want to be able to sit down with people, because I have. And I've been shocked at the results. There are people that I fundamentally disagree with on a number of issues. Like, I got Republicans that I have to work with. And I've been working in politics a really long time. We are not in a country where the Democrats have permanent and entrenched majorities. Now, the Democrats did. I need y'all to know that the Democrats had the majority in the House from 1954 until Newt Gingrich became Speaker in 1994. In fact, Republicans didn't even try to get the House majority. They didn't even try. Even in midterm elections, they never got it. Democrats stayed in control of the House. There was a Democratic Speaker of the House for 50 years in this country. Then it was gone. Well, 40 years. Long enough. It's a whole generation. Now, if Democrats did that, if they had entrenched majorities, then yeah, they wouldn't have to compromise. They could just make policies themselves and pass policies themselves. That's not necessarily a good thing. I like having a strong opposition party. They can offer alternatives. But here's the problem. The Republicans have stopped offering policy alternatives. Now they just promote a very unusual brand of whiteness. That's it. That is their policy. Chairman Spencer, the city attorney, called us. He may be calling us back at the top of the hour. You're going to have to stick around to find out. The Truth with Sherwin Hughes will be back for hour 3.